Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, the actor who's been in every single movie, Scott Glenn, is joining us, and the news.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, man. I was sitting at work today and got a text from my girl. It was a flyer for her best friend hosting a birthday party. The birthday is for her friend's one-year-old dog. My initial reaction? Ugh. Love to hear your thoughts on a puppy birthday party. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Scott Glenn has joined us. Greenland is the movie. It's available now on digital and on demand. Co-stars Gerard Butler, and the website is greenlandmovie.com. Congratulations on the movie, Scott.
Thank you.
I will say in all earnestness, I tried to watch the movie last night. I did not get the stupid code that let me on. They said they would send me the stupid code, but if I hit, I don't know the code. They never sent it to me. But I will tell you this. Everybody here saw the movie, and they're like, so here's the ultimate compliment, please. I know it sounds like a cop-out. We get a lot of movies. Most people here don't go, no, you need to see this one. You need to see this one. Normally, it's like, you know, don't bother. I'll show you the trailer. But yeah. In this case, everyone here said, you need to see this movie. So congratulations on that recommendation.
Thank you very much. And I also really get fucking frustrated with trying to deal with any kind of a computer, whether it's Zooming or so. I understand your spot, but yeah, we got lucky with this thing.
I don't know if you had a chance to see it yet. I was one of the ones who was grabbing Adam by the virtual lapels and saying, no, this is a really good movie. And typically when we get a lot of times when we get movies, we're reaching to find something nice to say about it, like, oh, you were great. Or, oh, I really enjoyed the opening credits or whatever. I came on this show and was like, you guys, Greenland is really good. Like first of all, it's going to sound like an insult, but I saw, you know, Gerard Butler in a disaster movie and blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch this movie. It blew my mind. It was so good. I was like, this is excellent. I really enjoyed the movie.
It became an interactive experience. I, too, had a hard time with getting a code, so I rented it, and worth the money, and we're going to watch it again later. But I was texting Brian during it going, no, this is not happening right now. Like, it was so intense. I needed somebody to interact with.
Yeah, I think part of what makes the thing work is it's really about a family staying together and getting healthy so that they can deal with these comets that are coming towards the Earth and have targeted basically the whole human race. The thing about, you know, lucky is a bad word to use, I guess, when we're talking about what we're going through. But when we made the movie, it was the summer before the fall when coronavirus hit. And none of us had ever heard that term. Now you watch the movie, you almost can't get it out of your mind because it's, you know, it's the virus is moving slower and you can't see it. But aside from that, it's kind of the same situation. Something that's natural is targeted the whole human race and is, you know, either too big or too small to deal with in any kind of traditional way.
It's very relevant. And also, I really admired, have you seen the finished product? You've seen the final film, I assume?
Yeah, I've seen it, but I've seen it on a small screen.
Okay.
So that way I've seen it, yeah.
I was impressed with, number one, so there's no real villain in the movie. It's kind of man versus nature. The idea of the movie for our listeners is, you know, these comets are coming into our atmosphere. They're going to cause this extinction event, and people have to find shelter and, you know, retreat to safety. So it's unique in that way that they're not fighting a villain, a traditional villain. Number two, I did some research, and it was written by, look at the name, Chris Sparling, who wrote one of my other favorite little movies, Buried, with Ryan Reynolds, where he's inside the casket underground.
Oh, Buried, right.
It all made sense. So, like, this is a really smart movie. It doesn't take any cheats, any like that. They would never do that. And I'm like, oh, of course, you know, the guy who wrote another one of my favorite movies wrote this.
Yeah, well, I've always said that every movie has really two stars. One's the writer, and the other's the director. And we kind of hang our hats on all of that. Without a good script, you're pretty much up the creek without a paddle.
It's a solid script.
I'm seeing, you know, we're seeing Silence of the Lambs, of course, and The Right Stuff and all those kinds of movies. But I didn't know you were in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Well, how did that, can you tell us about that story, how that came about?
They had cast the whole thing. Francis had cast all of the main parts. Excuse me. He wanted to populate all the smaller parts. So there were it was a long weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Somewhere in Hollywood, I can't really remember now, near Paramount, a couple of big sound stages. And it was like a cattle call. So you go into this sound stage, there are a bunch of chairs all around the walls, and then in the center of the soundstage were a bunch of card tables with folding chairs around them. And Francis would pick, you know, two or three or four guys to do an improv scene. So I went there Friday. He never called me. Saturday, never called me. Sunday, they put up a card table like right in front of me, and he gets four actors. He says, okay, this is the deal. You're on a PBR floating down the Mekong River. The engines are off, and you guys are having an argument about who should be the Playmate of the Year. And go. So these guys start doing improv, and they're funny and interesting, and they're doing good work, I guess. But I guess what I did watching them was kind of rolled my eyes up, kind of like this. And Francis saw it, and he stopped the improv like right away, and he walked over to me. He said, what's your name? I said, Scott Glenn. And he said, you know, that's very impolite. I know I haven't called you. You've been here for a while. I've noticed you, but I haven't called on you. Don't make comments on this work. They're doing great work. And I said, I'm sorry. I wasn't. Yeah, they were. They were doing great work. He said, why'd you roll your eyes? I said, you're rolling down the Mekong River with the engines off, and you're screaming at each other like that. You're going to have a mortar round in your fucking lap in 5 seconds. If you're going to have that kind of a fight, you have it like this. And he looked at me, and he brought one of his ADs over, and he pointed at me, and he said, I want him in my movie. So that's how I got the part. And I was going to be in a place called the Dulong Bridge. And everybody got to the Philippines. This is a long answer to your question.
But no, I'm interested.
Everybody got to the Philippines like a week and a half to early to get used to the fact that you've gone over the dateline and you're in the jungle and all that stuff. And the day after I got there in the evening of a weekend, and everybody was leaving that location to go back to Manila because they were sick of where they were, and I decided to stay there. It was on an isthmus on the South China Sea, and that night we got hit with the biggest typhoon to have hit the Philippines, Typhoon Didang, since 1932. And we were cut off from communication. Everybody thought we were dead for a while. And then they realized about a day and a half later, we were okay. And Francis came back with a helicopter. And on board was a guy from the insurance company. So with force majeure, it's not like oh, we got hit with the typhoon that's wrecked us. You have to continue to try to shoot the film. And some insurance guy has to observe that it is, in fact, impossible. And then you get your paycheck and you start over again. So they were going to, they went to the location was what had once been like a little brook and was now like whitewater. And they were going to put a boat into this whitewater with Francis, the insurance guy, and I think Victoria Sturarolano, four or five guys, and go out into this stream to observe that they couldn't really continue shooting. And they tied a rope on the back of the boat. And I was about 25, 30 yards away, and I saw them doing it. And I realized, because their idea was they were going to pull the boat back in if it got swept away. And I realized it was the stream was running so hard, it was going to take the boat downstream, and that rope was going to pull the back of the boat down, and it was going to sink for sure. So the minute they let the boat go, I, without really thinking, pulled out. I had always had a knife on me at the time. It was fairly recently out of the Marine Corps. And anyway, I grabbed the knife and I ran. I cut the rope, and the boat floated downstream a little bit, and they brought everybody in. And later that night, Francis said, came over to me and said, "You saved my life." And I said, "Yeah, I don't know. I just went on instinct. I saw what was happening." And he's a really good writer. I can write a great part for you anywhere in this movie. I want to do that. What do you want to do? And I said, I want to be in the end of the movie. And he said, "Scott, there's no way. That's the only part of the film that's completely cast. There's no way. I mean, you could play the Colby, the guy that went upstream ahead of Martin Sheen." He said, "But you'll have maybe two or three lines. It'd be like a glorified extra. I mean, I'm a man of my word. If you want to do that, you can." And I said, "Yeah, I want to do that." And my reasoning was I wanted to be around Marlon Brando and Dennis Hopper and Francis Coppola and just be around them when they were working, because I didn't really know that much about acting in front of the camera at the time. And, you know, doing comedy or acting or any of that stuff, is you serve an apprenticeship. You don't really learn it from going into school or opening a book, at least I don't. So I got to, they were going to shoot that for something like 4.5-5 months. So they got me a different job in the Philippines training these people who had come from northern Luzon down to be extras. And so I worked with a couple Green Berets and wound up being taken into the tribe and getting it. They were called the Ipagao, and getting an Ipagao name. And anyway, I finally got to work with Marlon Brando and Dennis Hopper and be around that part of the movie. And it changed my life. It completely changed my life.
Glad I asked. That's a crazy story. Our connection is a little rough, but I can understand you. I don't know if we should try to reboot it or what we can do. Dawson, you have a thought?
Yeah. Mr. Glenn.
Should I turn down the volume on my end?
Well, let's see.
Yeah, let's start there.
Try that.
Okay.
And
how does that? Any better?
Yeah, I think it is
a little better. Are you on a laptop? Maybe pull it a little closer to you than an iPad.
Do what?
Maybe move the iPad a little closer to you.
Well, I can. How's that?
Yeah,
is that better?
Yeah, that's a little better.
Good.
Okay.
Because I want to talk about racing motorcycles.
You race cars.
Yeah, I race cars, but I'm not so nutty as to race motorcycles.
Well, I've just done citizen racing and track days, but I love it. It's what do you want to know?
What did you race? What do you race? Like what people need to know about racing is you couldn't just say I race motorcycles, because we got to know Are you on dirt? Are you on a street? Are you?
No. Street bikes. I finally learned to put my knee in the ground, taking turns. And I've done every track in the West Coast on Ducatis. Two summers I did Ducatis. It was Triumph Daytona one summer. Yeah, like that. And then borrowed a Yamaha from somebody one time. Those kind of things, like running bikes and ice climbing, which I used to do, rock climbing and open water spearfishing. Well, you know, if you race cars, it's maybe doing stand-ups the same way. It can like really exhaust you on one level, but on another, it's really restful because it scrubs out the past and future. So you're not like, oh shit, I'm really sorry about what happened yesterday, or oh my God, what's coming tomorrow? All that stuff is gone. And it, like, kind of skiing is the same way. It kind of forces you to live in the present. So at the end of the day, your body might be, and attention might be really exhausted, but there's another part, at least with me, there's another part of you that, excuse me, is really rested, oddly.
Yeah, well, let's drill down on that, because I think that as humans, we're supposed to be in that state a little more than we are in that state these days.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, it kind of used to be that, you know, you don't have to be jumping out of an airplane or racing a motorcycle. You could just have a job that kind of required that kind of focus. Like if you, like, let's say you're one of these guys and you do the tree trimming where you go up to the top of the tree and you got the chainsaw and you're 80 feet up and you're in the harness and you're taking the thing. You're not really, your thoughts are not really drifting all over the place. You know what I mean? It's kind of what you're doing when you're doing it. And there's a kind of a focus and a weird freedom to that kind of singular focus. It's weird. I think everyone thinks freedom is just like everything at once. It's one thing at once at the tip of a pin. That's kind of what the freedom is. And when you're on that motorcycle and you're on, you're at Laguna Seca and you're heading down the straightaway and you're setting up for the Mario Andretti turn at the turn two at the end of the straightaway, there's nothing in your mind other than what you're doing. And I think so many people are looking at their phone and they're looking at the TV and they're listening to an AirBud and they're doing five things, but really they're not doing anything. And
you're 100% right about that. I've been Laguna Seca, especially hitting the corkscrew. If you're not right in the moment, you can't even be thinking about the last turn you made or the three in front. You've got to be right there, in and out, pretty much leaving your body alone. You're right. And and there are jobs that require that because you pay a big physical price if you walk away from them. And I think those things are, skiing is kind of the same way. My wife and I love to ski. It's really fun to do, but it's not something you can space out doing. You know, I think I was reading that the internet gives people so many choices that it tends to scramble our attention. And there was some guy, I can't remember his name, at MIT, who said that it gives us, that people are getting to have an average true attention span of between 8 and 10 seconds. Which is the attention span of it's either a goldfish or a codfish.
Well,
either way, it's an insult.
Yeah. So there's another study that is, if you give people a choice of five air fryers or five TV sets or five appliances, they're happy. But if you give them a choice of 20, they're not happy with the decision they made, because they think they picked the wrong one. And I think we're giving people too many choices. And there is so we used to live in a society that kind of demanded the attention, X amount of attention per day. I look, even not so long ago when I was a carpenter, that was just a job that kind of demanded attention. You're going to fire up a circular saw. You have to be yeah. there and present. Yeah. And certainly car racing, spear fishing, motorcycle riding, you know, it's all there. I would argue that people must synthesize that. You have to put yourself into those places. You may not have a job yeah. that requires it. You may not live in a society that requires it. You are going to have to do the ice climbing or the motorcycle riding like you. But boy, it is a freedom. And it's like, when is the last time you thought about nothing in the middle of the day for a prolonged period of time? Well, climb out of the race car, climb off the Ducati, and someone can go, what were you thinking about for the last 45 minutes? And the answer is nothing. No, yeah. no thoughts other than what I was doing.
Yeah. Don't you think in a way performance is kind of like that when it's really worth? I mean, I know you're a boxer. You've taught boxing. And I've done a lot of martial arts and a little bit of boxing. It's like, you know, you can work out on a heavy bag and, you know, work like maybe your best shot's a shovel hook. And you can, you know, work jab, jab, cross hook, jab, jab, cross, and work all that stuff out. But when you're in a match and the bell rings, you better not be thinking any of those things. Just leave yourself alone. Your body's going to just do what it's going to do. And if you start thinking, kind of, to me, that's what, once lines are down in a script, and I'm just learning this, the more you can just leave it alone and let it take you away, the better it is. I mean, invariably, my best performances, and they haven't happened, I don't want to bullshit you, they haven't happened that often, but when they have, and the director, I mean, the last time I was doing a TV thing, I had a great director, a woman named Mimi Leader. She said, remember when you picked up the tape recorder and you heard your son's voice and you started to cry and went, no? And she said, what? And I literally didn't remember a 7-page scene that I'd done, any of it, none of it. I remember action and cut, and what happened in between was, it was like one of the greatest gifts ever given. You know, it'd be nice if we could do that all the time.
Yeah, you know, well, it's kind of interesting because, like, if you do stand up, part of you's in the moment, and then another part of you is loading up the next thought and the next joke and the next thing. So there's kind of a duality.
Yeah. Never, when you're doing stand up, are you waiting for or listening or expecting laughs?
It's more the audience that expects laughs and never. No. There's a cadence to it, and there's places where you know they usually laugh, and then there's things that surprise you sometimes. You say things. It's really weird, you know, comedy is weird in what the audience laughs at, because it can surprise you a lot. Like, I'll give you a perfect example of a joke and then something that gets a bigger laugh than the joke, and I don't know why it does, but I would do this joke that went this way. Wait, I'm hearing some feedback. Is that off of
yours? Yeah, I think it's because we're not using headphones.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Glenn doesn't have headphones.
Okay, should we turn it down a little
bit? Let's turn it down a little bit more, please.
Turn it down a little bit. And then I'll share with you the joke that, for some reason, gets a bigger laugh than the joke doesn't get as big a laugh as the part that shouldn't get a laugh, which is the joke is, wearing Crocs is like being blown by a dude. Oh, it feels awesome until you look down, which gets a laugh. But I told that joke on stage in the Bay Area, and somebody threw a Croc at me. And I'd say I told that joke in, you know, Sacramento 2 months ago, and somebody threw a crock at me, and everyone erupts in laughter. It's not even really a joke. But it is a true story, and I don't know why it's funny. You know, like, I don't know what they're identifying with. You work so hard on a joke, you think you got it right, and it gets half the laugh that a true story of some guy throwing a crock at me. Then if you're smart, you'll say, I don't know to this day whether the guy pulled it off his foot or he travels with a throwing crock, which now you give it a little button to it. But why people get a big laugh out of an actual thing that happened that isn't really a joke is always interesting to me. So that's my example of unexpected laugh and sometimes expected laugh. Do you, when's the last time you've been spearfishing? Ooh, spearfishing's kind of great. Well, don't let me put words in your mouth, but I don't think another thing that people don't understand about motorsports is it's not just the experience, it's the sound that's mixed with the experience. It's a kind of the helmet kind of muffles a very loud noise that's around you, but there's a kind of a deprivation tank, kind of a sensory deprivation of not being able to hear anything except for the sound of the engine. And I imagine being underwater has a lot of those same traits.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, what we did, I haven't spearfished now in 3 years, and I don't know if I ever will again, because my dermatologist told me it's a bad idea. We call it blue water hunting. So it's not like going off of reefs or anything. You get in a boat where I've done most of it is off the coast of Kona. With a friend who's one of the great open water spear fishermen in the world. And we'd go about 30 miles out and jump off the boat. So the water is no longer hundreds of feet or 50 feet deep. It's thousands of feet deep. And people either are freaked out by it right away and you know, instantly see sharks coming at them, most of which are just in their mind, or feel like they've come home. And I'm one of the latter. It's just, and you're right. You can't hear when you drop down to shoot a mahi-mahi or a tuna. You're going anywhere from 20 to, I guess, the deepest dives I made shooting fish were around 70 feet.
Wow, that's super deep.
And then there is that day when you jump in the water and there are sharks everywhere. And so you really have to be in the, you know, you have to be in the present totally, and you'll be fine. It's not like sharks are these evil, vicious killing machines who are going to come after you. They might. But you learn to read their body language. So you know before they make a move when they're in a fight or flight mode or, you know, what's going to happen. And then you deal with each. What you don't want to do is turn your back on them. But, there is that sensory deprivation of, it's just a space that is all its own.
So I don't know if you have any recommendations, but especially with this whole COVID thing, I've been saying for a year, people have to go out, get away from the TV set, get away from their phone, start a project, do something where they get engaged and pulled in. So the thing about sitting in front of the TV with your phone on your lap and your computer on your other knee, that is zero engagement. It's kind of all agitation. The thing about riding a Ducati at Laguna Seca, that's 100% engagement, but you only really need 30% engagement. You know, going down to your garage and just doing a project, that can be 30% engagement, but you still are going to have to find that. You're going to have to pull out of that. Ice climbing and deep water spear fishing and Ducati racing at, you've probably been to Sonoma and all the tracks around here, right?
Sears Point's my favorite.
Sears Point is Sonoma. That's where Dax Shepard got into trouble a few months back. I think you were doing that story, Gina Grad.
Yep.
Yes, that is an intense track because it's got a lot of elevation change and it's got a lot of kind of blind corners and stuff. And it's a little intense, that track. Like, it's a little, you gotta kind of learn it.
It wakes you up. And if you do it early in the morning, you have to pay attention to wherever there's paint because it's real slippery. It's not like Willow Springs where horsepower rules, where the straightaways are so long that if you've got a really powerful bike, you just screw it down and hang on. No, Sears Point, you really have to be able to have an idea of what you're doing.
And also, so there are places like Willow Springs that if you go off the track, you just keep going. There's just desert, you know. But there are places at Sears Point, like at the end of the straightaway, that if you go off the track, you hit concrete. So you have to be careful on those kind of tracks. But so for you, are you like a do you do art? Are you a handyman? Are you a woodworker? Do you do stuff in the garage?
No, my wife's a way better artist than I am. She's a potter, a master potter.
Oh.
So I wedge clay. I sand the feet of plates and bowls, and I write poetry. I've been writing poetry a lot longer than I've been acting, so I do that, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry to tell you that I was a ceramics major in high school, and when I announced to my daughter that I was an artist in high school, she mocked working with ceramics and said it wasn't really an artist. So don't tell your wife, but I know the difference between a pinch pot.
Tell your daughter not to travel to Japan.
Done and done. All right, the movie. Let me give the movie a plug. Greenland. I will tell you this, everyone. I'll make you this challenge. Watch the trailer for this movie and then tell me if you don't want to purchase it, because it is one of the most effective trailers I've seen in a long time. Like, you watch the trailer and you go, I am in. It's available now on digital and on demand. And the website, greenlandmovie.com. Scott Glenn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, sir. Had a good one.
You too, and keep up the great work. All right, we'll take ourselves a quick break. We'll come right back with the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden, Kamala. Big news with Gina Grad.
News with Gina Grad.
Ice climbing. I can't stop thinking about that. He goes ice climbing. I'm going to have to look more into that.
That's a man.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy.
My God. James Franco. Haven't heard that name in a while. He has reached a settlement in that sexual misconduct suit his former students brought against him. And I have a little bit of insight on that. So he was accused in a 2019 lawsuit of intimidating several female students into sexual situations at the acting school that he founded. So we have the names. Sarah Tither-Kaplan and Tony Gall allege that James Franco's Studio 4 acting school sexual actually exploited female students, and that his production companies were also named in the suit, which accused Studio 4 of setting out to, quote, create a steady stream of young women to objectify and exploit. And now the two women have agreed to drop their individual claims. According to Variety, quote, their sexual exploitation claims are also being dismissed without prejudice, which leaves them open to being refiled. The financial amount of the settlement has not been disclosed. Of course, Franco's attorney has said this is false and inflammatory. And this surfaced in 2018. And that's kind of what kept him low profile around Disaster Artist time, which was a great movie. But remember, like, he wasn't really, you know, he wasn't showing up for these award shows.
I think it also cost him an Oscar nomination.
Yeah. That's the theory. Yeah.
Yeah, that movie had a lot of heat when it came out, and then this came out. I don't know. Would we... here's what I'm saying. Oscars, we'd like to know what the best film was of the year, right?
That's quite all right with you.
Well, like, who didn't get into trouble with the ladies? Right. You know what I mean? Like, could you imagine it was like, well, Tom Brady... the Bucks scored more points than the Chiefs, but with Brady's missteps with his first divorce, and we're just going to go ahead and give it to the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm. We've named them champions.
Yeah. Does that feel satisfying to anybody? Like, we're basing so much of this shit based on what's going on politically, or whether you got accused of or caught for this. Like, I thought we just wanted the best actor and the best movie.
You know who it would be the least satisfying for? The award winner. Like, yeah, oh, I got this because I might be boring, but I stayed out of trouble.
They never feel that way. But it was like the last several years with a sort of woke-off competition in the Oscars, hasn't it just kind of made people lose interest? Like, kind of just like, well, they're going to give it to whoever's the wokest, whatever. And
Absolutely. I think the ratings have reflected that.
And it's not only have the ratings reflected it, but it's like, most people outside of Brian can't even name the last five or two of the last five best films. I don't even know. I wrote for the Oscars. I don't know who won last year.
On top of the Parasite, on top of that, I've been really bad at predicting. Like, I usually, I'm thinking like, oh yeah, I know what the best picture is. I'm like, oh, for the last four or five, it's gone to the Parasites of the world or Moonlight. You know, good movies, but it's like, oh, that's the best picture of the year.
Also, I would kind of argue that the real test of a movie, you know, sort of classic, is watching the movie again. You know, I've probably seen Saving Private Ryan 9 times, you know, or we've all seen the Full Metal Jackets. You know, you see them, then you share them with your kids or your friends or whatever. No one is watching Moonlight over and over again.
9 times.
9 times. So, Franco, although I don't like everyone being canceled, but I like Franco being canceled because he got initially busted because he wore his Time's Up pin on his lapel or something. Right. And somebody saw him sucking up to the group, and then he got chewed up by the same group. So I'm not a big fan of this happening to people, but if it's one of the people who tried to suck up to the group and then got chewed up by the group, I do enjoy that.
It's like the combine just keeps rolling, and he got caught up underneath it. Yeah. This is something that I feel like maybe has come up before, but I'm not sure. And it deserves a little discussion because it's in the news. The act of removing a condom during sex without consent is called stealthing, just FYI. And it could become illegal in the state of California. So a bill was introduced by
Can I just say this about the legislators and California and bills and could be legal? I'll tell you what. Let's save some fucking time. Just tell us what is legal. Because at this point, everything is illegal. Everything is illegal. I just love when the California congresswoman introduced that. How about we fucking deal with the homeless? Or traffic or transportation or schools or something. Something.
No, we're starting here.
Get with that. Yes.
So if this passes, It's a non-consensual condom removal. They're going to call it sexual battery and would allow a victim to pursue a claim for damages under the state civil code. If passed, experts say the measure would be the first such law in any state to explicitly address non-consensual condom removal.
How about we be the third in something? Not the first retards in every fucking thing we try to pass. Like, we're sort of like on the vanguard. Like, we're always the first. We're the first. Yes, we're so progressive. It's awesome.
It's kind of like what Brian said one time about, I think it was Brian, about, you know, world Guinness book holders, or maybe it was you, Adam. I don't remember.
But, well, let's figure it out. Was it funny or was it annoying?
It was clever. It was clever.
Those are only two choices.
That, you know, do you really get it if just because it's so random, no one else would have thought
that
to
that
do
was
it?
Me. It was because I remember like the world record for like bowling backwards was like 120. I'm like, well, that's not so much a record as no one wasted their time bowling and driving backwards.
My friend Josh wanted to get the old morning show wanted to get a Guinness Book person down so they could see if he could eat a chocolate advent calendar the fastest. So you could literally do anything.
Yeah, so it'll be legal to remove the condom without illegal to remove the condom without informing your partner.
Yes. And you know what? I kind of get it. I mean, like, if you're trying to, as a lady, stay maybe baby/disease-free and you see a condom go on, then, yeah, if he removes it and either gets you pregnant or gives you a disease, I think he should be held accountable.
What about Howie Mandel when he does that move where he puts it on his head? Is that a glove or a condom?
It's a glove. It's a glove, but a five-headed condom.
It's a hand condom.
It's a cow condom.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not sure the anatomy works. He did have the glove bag, right? He had the glove like side bag. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
No.
Howie Mandel.
You mean in the act?
Yes. Otherwise, I wouldn't be questioning you guys. You don't know him socially?
Well, we've met him, but I don't remember that.
It's over his mantle.
He used to. You've never been camping with Howie? I would watch that show. He, in his early days, had a satchel, kind of like a purse, man purse, satchel thing that was a glove. I think it was shaped like a glove. Maybe that's where he kept some of his comedic props. We'll figure it out. Max Pat will look. Anyway, good. More rules. Awesome. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, I put in Howie Mandel glove bag, and they pulled up a delightful tote that says, "It's all coming up, Howie," and you can get his face.
Oh,
I don't think that's what you meant.
It's a tote with Howie on it.
Well, I don't think that was the one you wanted.
No, is that Howie or is that the campy? Is it Carrot Top?
Carrot Top had a bag.
I swear to God, Howie had the glove. Hey, we're talking from the 80s or whatever.
Howie did it a lot with the, remember, he would put it on his head and blow it up and it would pop out?
Yeah, that was the iconic bit.
Right.
Yeah.
So South Park is doing a second pandemic special.
Oh, there he is.
It's not on the
show the group.
Screen,
but we'll
show. Oh, sorry. Is it from
Describe
a stand-up
it.
Special?
Yeah, it's 87 comic relief stand-up.
Oh, comic relief. Yeah, he went out. I don't know what he called it, but he had a huge glove satchel or purse. It seemed like the worst because, well, I don't know, like forefinger could be tampons, you know, index finger could be lighters and cigarettes. Like, I guess lipstick
Chapstick.
Could be thumb.
Smart.
Yeah, I guess you could figure it out. Well, Max Pat will figure out how to show it to you. Anyway, random thought. Go ahead, Gina.
So South Park is doing another pandemic special. This is the 1 hour South Park, but instead of a K, it's a Q, an all caps Q, vaccination special, which follows the characters as they try to get vaccinated. It premieres March 10th on Comedy Central. The first special aired last fall. I actually just watched it like two nights ago. I hadn't seen the last special.
Where do those guys get the energy? Like, I mean, what I'm saying is like, we did the Man Show, we did 100 episodes, and after we did 100 episodes, we're kind of like, we did 100 episodes. Like, we're ready to turn the page. Like, I guess it's different writing them, but they have to voice them.
They do.
How much are they involved at this point?
I do not know, but they're they're doing the voices and everything, yeah. right? Like, it just feels like, I don't know, it just feels like you'd creatively like just kind of go like, ah, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do Cartman anymore.
Well, to be fair, they did stop and write a hit Broadway musical.
True. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't be poo-pooing it. I'm just kind of saying it's just crazy how long South Park's been going.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you're poo-pooing it. It sounds like it's impressive.
A little caca in there. People say caca. What happened to caca?
Yeah, no more caca.
That's never uttered in our house.
Caca got replaced by poop, and poop I found weirder, slimier or something.
You know who used to say caca? Like teachers in elementary school. Like, if you don't do that assignment, you are in deep caca, mister.
Oh, yeah.
Part of that.
But I think they're saying, like, deep poop now. Like, poop took over caca. I don't like it. I like to bring caca back.
Let's put that on the legislation in California.
Yeah, let's be reintroduced to caca. Max Patty got him in his glove?
Yeah.
It's important. It's important that everyone know that I'm not insane.
Oh, wow. It's like a big hamburger helper hand.
Yeah, it's a giant hamburger helper hand glove that Howie...
I could rock that.
I like that Howie has a lot of embarrassing photos from the 80s.
You mean the gold lamé jacket that B. Arthur should have been wearing?
Yes, and the big hair with the no hair now. Sorry, what else we got, Gina?
All right. Well, a popular snowblower is being recalled over a safety hazard as heavy winter storms have blowing across the U.S. Not just any safety hazard. They're afraid of an amputation hazard. Oh. Fox News reports that Toro is recalling 6,700 snowblowers because of a faulty auger that can fail to disengage when the lever's released, and they're afraid it's going to cut limbs off. No injuries reported yet, but 5 cases of the failure have been reported. The snowblowers, in case you have one, were manufactured in Juarez, Mexico, sold nationally at Home Depot, Ace Hardware, other places, and from November of last year to January of this year, for about $1,200 a piece, you might want to take it back in. It could decapitate you.
Yeah. It's kind of, well, first off, you can't go to Mexico for snowblowers. They know nothing. Right? That culture knows nothing about snow. So
they don't know from snow.
That's strike one. I was thinking about every poor person I know who grew up in the East or in that climate said they'd always make a few bucks during the summer, during the winter months, shoveling driveways, you know? And I realized I was a perfect candidate for a shoveler when I was 12. I had a back that would last all day long. I had a great motor.
Put in the earth to shovel.
Yes, I was. I dug ditches later, but I mean, if I lived in a snowy environment, I would have fucking cleaned up by just every Saturday I would have just walked all the way up and down the street, charged $5 a driveway, shoveled the shit out of it, and put $40 in my pocket. Instead, I got $1 an hour to watch Starsky and Hutch and babysit. But I would have been completely down with that. Yeah. California, there was that not a business to be had in that sort of world. Like, you could mow the lawn, but people already
car.
Yeah, throw papers.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a paper route, I guess. But I would have done right with the shoveling.
That would have been good for you.
No pun intended.
Yeah,
and I came from a very snowy environment in Kansas, and I never seen a snowblower. Except for rich people, everyone just shoveled. And you pour salt.
I guess it's kind of the difference between a push mower and a tractor mower. You know what I mean? Like the snow blower, I think you fire it up and you push it along and it just shoots it out.
Everyone my grandpa and everyone I knew in Tahoe had one. They're like the price of a lawnmower, right? They're not exotic.
Well, this one's a little pricier. What did you say, $1,200?
$1,200.
But you could get one. I guess so. I don't know. I feel like when your driveway's full of snow, that's God saying, start drinking early. You know what I mean? Screw work. All right, let's do one more, Gina Grad.
All right. Well, you know that I'm going to combine these because we have to get to them since they've both been in the news. I'll just throw this one in at the top. A couple of Florida guys are in jail for impersonating federal marshals so they could get out of having to wear a mask. Their plan backfired when they met a real federal marshal. These dudes were at a resort in Florida, and I'm just skimming in here. They were asked to put a mask on. They refused. They told the staff they're federal marshals and would arrest them. Then they flashed some fake credentials, and then one of the hotel employees called their bluff, called the police. Officers and a real federal marshal arrived and placed them under arrest. And the latest story is a couple of young women in Florida were turned away from their second COVID vaccination when they were dressed up as like comical elderly women to try and sneak through being over 65. They had bonnets. They had gloves. I don't know what costume shop they went to, but the health officials say the two women were in their 20s and they dressed up like grannies for their second dose. So unclear how they got the first dose. Somebody's probably said that they looked, passable. Officials were suspicious, denied them their shot. Authorities say the number of people attempting to falsify their identities is higher than expected. And security has been ramped up since the incident at the convention center down there in Florida.
This is kind of like the white chick version of what the NBA guy did last year in the bubble when he's trying to sneak his girlfriend in dressed like a man.
Yep.
So there's that. They don't ask for your ID when they say it's 65 and older. Like, they don't want to see.
They have fake IDs are not that hard to get.
That must be the easiest part. Yeah, fake ID.
Oh, so they probably have the fake ID and then they have with the...
Look at like Vicky Lawrence. Like, how do you even make that passable looking?
Mama's family.
Yeah.
And, hit song, Vicky Lawrence.
Yes.
As we've talked about, her and David Soul. She did. It sounds like that's the night the lights went out in Georgia.
Oh, thank you. I was also thinking Harper Valley PTA.
Yeah, no, you're thinking the Billy Joe jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Right.
Yeah,
that was another. There was a whole whole bunch of those like sheriff, small towny death. You know, weird sort of southerny hot night, and the tracks were leading back to his house. You know, like he shot
very Dateline.
Shot him dead. Like yeah.
The same itch.
The whole song, is a fucking Dateline episode. Yeah. Like it turns out, it was the brother that shot the whatever. It's the small town sheriff, and there was just a whole bunch of those weird storytelling. Southern summer heat night, you know, hot night, you know, couldn't sleep. So I left the house and it was like creeping about, you know, it was like, I don't know why that became a genre. Be weird to have it come back.
At least, you know, that between Lynette and me and all the, you know, women who love the Dateline special, those existed in story form long before Keith Morrison ever showed up on the scene.
Yes. So, they say that the first shot is pretty effective and the follow-up shot is fine, but you can get 3/4 of the way there for the first shot. So these ladies got the first shot.
The booster. Yeah.
Seems like we're heading toward herd immunity from some of the stories I've heard. So maybe we'll get there. We'll see where this thing keeps going, but it's going down pretty fast.
In the right direction.
It's funny because this is mostly anecdotally, but I remember a few months ago with the hypothetical shot, people saying, would you get it? I don't know. I'd wait. I'm going to wait. People are dressing up in costumes and disguises to get this thing. People are standing by the, you know, Lake Balboa, soccer park here at the end of the day to see if there are extras. I mean, people are interested.
Well, you know what there needs to be? There needs to be like an exchange program, sort of like we've talked about, like when a all-star player gets traded from one team to the next and he's number 9 and the kicker's wearing number 9. He goes, I want to buy your jersey off you. So what we need is like, hey, elderly black man who's freaked out because of the Tuskegee experiment, you give your car to these young Floridian chicks who want to get the thing. Because there's a group, there's probably an equal number of Americans who are like freaked out for getting it for various reasons. It's probably about the same number of people who would like to jump the line.
Sure.
Right.
But, as far as herd immunity goes, I just want an extra 25 million people vaccinated. I'm not really interested in who it is.
Who?
We just need more people in the general pop with the vaccination. So why don't we see if we could work out, you know, like one of those dating sites for people with herpes or something. Like, it's like, okay, we're all here for the same reasons. Yeah. So have the old black guy who's scared of the Tuskegee thing. He can hand it off to the young Floridian, Karen. So she can be safe. All right, let's bring it home. Sorry.
Okay, COVID instead of okay, Cupid.
Okay, COVID.
I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Oklahoma City Bricktown Comedy Club this Friday, Saturday. We're doing live pods there and stand-up as well. And then Reno and Los Angeles, Jam in the Van Speakeasy. Adam Ray's going to open and pull the ping pong balls. We'll do that. There'll be Mangria there. There'll be cannabis there. That'll be March 25th. And you go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows because they're everywhere. Where the hell? It was Scott Glenn's thing here. Ah, here we go. Greenland, available now on digital and on demand. And until next time, Adam Carolla, Gina Grad, Paul Bryan, and Scott Glenn saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And be sure you pick up Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. Get it now. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.